I'm Sandra, and I'm just the professional your small business was looking for. But you didn't hire me because you didn't use LinkedIn jobs. LinkedIn has professionals you can't find anywhere else, including those who aren't actively looking for a new job, but might be open to the perfect role, like me.
In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't visit other leading job sites. So if you're not looking on LinkedIn, you'll miss out on great candidates, like Sandra. Start hiring professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/recommend today.
You are listening to the After Hours Podcast.
Yeah, yeah, that's me. Halfway through our first show of the week, it's good to be back in studio. It's really good to be back in studio when there are 8,422 different topics that we could pick apart on this first show of the work week. Coming up inside a half hour, we'll talk about Tiger Woods. Many of you are pointing to his first PGA Tour victory in 5 years as the biggest drought buster of the weekend, but it wasn't the only one. We had some other drought busting moves from the world of sports. We got a poll up on Twitter. You can find it A-Law Radio or on our show Twitter. It's also on our Facebook page, After Hours with Amy Lawrence. What's the weirdest and wackiest things you saw this weekend in sports? 855-212-4227. And thanks for all of your kind words about my pictures with Mom. If you haven't seen them, they're on Twitter or they're pinned to the top of our Facebook page. All right, let's dive in, shall we? We're inside the Quicken Loans studios. National mortgage lender Quicken Loans. Apply simply, understand fully, mortgage confidently. We're obsessed with our quarterbacks, and we're obsessed with our quarterback changes or our quarterback history. We had a bunch of both week three in the NFL. I'll start with this. Drew Brees now has more completed passes than any other quarterback in NFL history. Brett Favre had set the line at 6,300. You know, the Brett Favre who's in the Hall of Fame. Well, Drew Brees is headed there at 39 years old, though he's not done playing. And early in the Saints game against the Atlanta Falcons, he completed his 6,301st pass in his NFL career. He then tacked on a few more after that. But the point is, he now has completed more passes than any other quarterback in NFL history. It's after Hours with Amy Lawrence on CBS Sports Radio. Let's start with Philadelphia, who welcomes back its MVP candidate at quarterback, or he was anyway, until he got injured in December of last year. And boy, has he been chomping at the bit to get on that field again, as have we. You don't even have to be an Eagles fan to appreciate the energy, the aggressiveness, the leadership that Carson Wentz brings to the field. So he takes over as the starting quarterback after Nick Foles did the job in the first 2 weeks for the Philadelphia Eagles. And he just happens to bookend his first game back with a pair of touchdown drives. The start of the game in a downpour against the Indianapolis Colts. And then also later in the game in which he led the team on a 17-play drive that consumed more than 11 minutes in the fourth quarter. Think about that. A quarter is 15 minutes. This 17-play drive that resulted in the go-ahead touchdown for Carson Wentz and the Eagles took 11 minutes and 18 seconds off the clock. That's almost an entire quarter. Really difficult for Andrew Luck and the Colts, or Jacoby Brissett and the Colts, to come back when they've got no time left on the clock. So Carson goes 25 of 37, 255 yards, a touchdown, as well as a couple of turnovers, but he was still aggressive and he was still scrambling. He just looked a little bit rusty, and you can imagine the emotions that were surging.
Obviously, emotions were running high from the moment I woke up this morning, but for me, I was just putting on worship music and just getting in the zone like that. Just felt like another game at the end of the day.
Now, I wonder if he was singing it out loud like Tim Tebow. Remember Tebow used to get captured on the mics on NFL Network and the different NFL broadcasts, and he'd be singing worship music at the top of his lungs on the sidelines? I don't know if Carson's been captured doing that yet, but welcome back, Carson Wentz. And I think with Carson, as much as he'll shake off that rust quickly, it was important, and I thought it also stood out, that Doug Peterson wanted to be aggressive and wanted to make sure that right off the top, Carson got into that rhythm as much as possible, which meant playing fast.
Doug and I talked about it early in the week and thought it would be something just kind of get me started, get the offense started, get us all starting fast. And he trusted us with it, and it, obviously the result was a good one.
Yeah, I mean, they stumbled a bit in the midsection of this game. It's not like they lit the world on fire here. But to have the touchdown drive early and then the long touchdown drive in the fourth quarter, that was impressive, and it also resulted in a win. It's After Hours with Amy Lawrence on CBS Sports Radio. Carson Wentz is back as Jimmy Garoppolo potentially makes his exit, and this might turn out to be the worst story coming out of week number three. There could be some other season-ending injuries. Marcus Peters is another one to keep an eye on, the cornerback for the Los Angeles Rams. But how devastating would it be if, in fact, it's confirmed on Monday that Garoppolo has torn his ACL? And for everything that the NFL is doing to protect its quarterbacks from aggressive hits to the point where now defenders are confused, they're getting flagged for textbook tackles. And yet the irony of the situation is that in week three, Jimmy Garoppolo may have torn his ACL just by stepping wrong. You cannot protect quarterbacks from all and any injury. It's just not possible. But this is devastating for him and for the Niners as a whole. Even as we wait for confirmation from the MRI, you can hear it in the tone of voice with his quarterback. Well, his quarterback coach, and I mean that just because Kyle Shanahan is known for being so good with the offense, and the fact that he was tailoring his offense around Jimmy Garoppolo after he signed that long-term deal. So now Kyle Shanahan, you can hear it in his tone of voice, but he's going to have to hand off more than likely to CJ Beathard.
Anytime you lose your starting quarterback, I mean, that's, you know, everyone, that is a big deal. And it was when we lost our starting running back too. So obviously, feel for him personally. I know how disappointed he is.
I mean, we had a lot of injuries today, not just Jimmy. A lot of guys went down today. It's just a matter of, you know, our psyche keeping everybody in it, you know, onto the next week and staying positive.
I get that it's next man up. It's that way everywhere, always in pro and college sports. But certainly it's emphasized in pro sports because it's a job. It's a career. It's not just a game to them. But to me, it's still still a punch to the gut. I was so excited to watch Jimmy finally get his chance as a starting QB, not having to worry about keeping the seat warm for Tom Brady. This was his team. He knew the Niners wanted him. They're trying to give him some weapons. Marquise Goodwin was back and healthy and had a breakout game. And now this, late in the fourth quarter, he steps awkwardly on his left foot, and that could be the end of his season. It's After Hours with Amy Lawrence on CBS Sports Radio. I do not know if it's the end of the line for Sam Bradford in Arizona. I only know that the Cardinals had a lead on the Bears, a double-digit lead, and then everything came crashing down. And in the midst of all of that, Sam Wilkes, new head coach in the desert, decided that he would throw Josh Rosen out there. He would replace Sam Bradford with Josh Rosen in the hopes that that would help them to hang on to this victory against the Chicago Bears. Unfortunately, for Rosen and for the Cardinals, not for the Bears, Chicago picked him off to seal their victory. And so it was a come-from-behind win for Chicago. And for Josh Rosen, he goes 4 of 7. So, you know, a small sample size. 4 of 7, really green. He does have a 12-yard run in there, plus the interception. But he also had to face that Matt Nagy defense.
I guess you could say kind of content that I got to get out there and sort of understand that, kind of get the feel of a real NFL game. But definitely could play a lot better. So looking forward to getting better in the weeks to come.
Now, we don't know whether or not he will be out there for the Cardinals' next start. Obviously, there are a lot of question marks about him. This would truly be trial by fire. He is among the greenest rookie QBs. But whatever it was that Sam Wilkes was trying to do, it didn't work. They lost. They gave up. Actually, they had, after putting 2 touchdowns on the board in the first quarter, had 3 consecutive quarters with no points. Bradford threw another two interceptions, even though he did have two touchdowns, another two interceptions. But is Rosen really the answer? No, they have far more questions and question marks than Rosen can be the answer to. Do you want to get him killed? Do you want to throw him out there and destroy his confidence? I'm not sure what Steve Wilks is going to do moving forward, but we did see Rosen's NFL debut. It's After Hours here on CBS Sports Radio. We also saw the debut of one Baker Mayfield going back to Thursday. You wanted energy. You wanted a spark. Well, we absolutely got it when the number one overall draft pick entered the game late in the first half on Thursday night. So it was the Browns. They were struggling, and I mean scuffling, with Tyrod Taylor. They did not have any type of offense to speak of. But Baker comes off the bench as Taylor had to leave the game with a concussion. It was coming, regardless of whether or not it was a concussion-induced entrance into the game. It was coming for Baker Mayfield. And right away, you could see the entire energy level in the stadium pick up, but for his teammates as well. It was a spark. It was exactly what Hugh Jackson was looking for. And cherry on top, it resulted in a Browns win.
Mayfield is in a pistol formation right now, and now he's running away from center, and the snap goes to Duke Johnson. Then they flip it around, then they throw it, and Mayfield caught it! The Philly special, Cleveland style! David Njoku! I love it!
Now, obviously, once Baker got in the game at quarterback, you just saw a different rhythm, which was good to see. Obviously, young man did some really good things. I can't take that away from him. What a night for him. You know, obviously, he came off the bench, went in there and led this team.
He did just that. The Browns won their first game in 635 days. They snapped a 19-game winless streak, which was tied for the fourth longest in NFL history. Be happy, Cleveland. Now, is that the biggest drought buster of the weekend in sports? I don't know. Kerryon Johnson just posted the Lions' first 100-yard rushing game since Reggie Bush in late 2013. Tiger Woods hadn't won on the PGA Tour since 2013, or is it the Browns snapping a 19-game winless streak? Baker Mayfield, 17 of 23 for 201 yards, and count them, 1, 2, 3, 4 glorious scoring drives. Four of them. And also the Cleveland defense had three more takeaways. It was a total team effort, but I'm telling you what, it was electric. For those of you who are at the game on Thursday night, I've gotten many of your tweets. I'd love to hear from you. 855-212-4227. That's 855-212-4227. All right, coming up, the Dallas Cowboys offense, it could use a major spark. The Seattle Seahawks take advantage of Dallas and get their first victory of the season. And we're also going to let you hear from Tiger Woods, because regardless of it being an NFL Sunday, it was also a Hallmark day for one Tiger Woods. Just an amazing scene at East Lake in Georgia. So a lot to do still. We're going to get to your calls as well, I promise, straight ahead after Hours with Amy Lawrence on CBS Sports Radio.
Welcome to Play It, a new podcast network featuring radio and TV personalities talking business, sports, tech, entertainment, and more. Play it at play.it.
You are listening to the After Hours Podcast.
Third down and 9 at the 48 of the Seattle Seahawks. Russell from the shotgun, Davis in the backfield. Slot far side, four-man rush. Russell steps up in the pocket, throws down the sideline pocket. 20, 15, 10, 5, touchdown, Seahawks!
Now, the first 2 weeks, we were so off schedule, you know, and it really comes down to that, really. When you can stay on schedule like we did tonight, I'm not even sure if we had any penalties. I don't really know, maybe one, maybe two, but we stayed on schedule, and that gives us a great, tremendous chance to make the plays that we want to do.
Hits, misses, and messes. Time to talk football after hours with Amy Lawrence.
The voice of one, Russell Wilson, in the home opener for the Seattle Seahawks. And you hear Steve Rabel with the call of the 52-yard bomb up the sideline to Tyler Lockett. We had a lot of excitement for the Seahawks and their fans because they returned home 0-2 and had to take on the Dallas Cowboys. Now, Seattle doesn't allow a touchdown to the Cowboys until the fourth quarter, which was huge. They forced three Cowboys turnover, including a couple of interceptions off Dak Prescott by Earl Thomas. Both of them quirky. One bounced off the hands of Blake Jarwin, the tight end. Another looked like it was an incomplete pass. In fact, it was ruled an incomplete pass until it was on replay, proven that the ball never hit the ground. In fact, it was resting on the shoelaces of Earl Thomas, and he managed to keep it from touching the ground. So kind of crazy, but both of those for Earl Thomas, just not only was it huge for the defense, but also had a little extra electricity to it because he's clearly unhappy. Certainly looked like he was blowing off his coach, Pete Carroll, on the sidelines when Carroll tried to celebrate with him following one of those interceptions. So three Cowboys turnovers, no touchdowns until the fourth quarter. They waste a 100-plus yard rushing game for Ezekiel Elliott, though he did have a late fumble. And Bobby Wagner returns. And so the defense looked a lot more like what the Seahawks have shown us these past few years. Really made things miserable for the Dallas offense, forcing in one stat that jumped out was the 3 of 13 on the third downs. But also for the Seahawks, they find a groove in the first quarter, as Russell Wilson mentions. They have three consecutive scoring drives in the first half. And while Wilson wasn't over 200 yards, he did have a couple of touchdowns, and they did just enough to get off the schneid and get their first win. It's After Hours with Amy Lawrence on CBS Sports Radio. Our toll-free line is 855-212-4227. That's 855-212-4227. Brought to you by Geico. With a quick way you can save money, switch to Geico. Go to geico.com, and in 15 minutes, you could save 15% or more on your car insurance. Let's talk to Cody, who's in Redding, California. Welcome to After Hours CBS Sports Radio.
Hey, Amy. Glad that you're back.
Thank you.
Here's my thing. I'm a diehard Dallas Cowboys fan, always have been. But this season is just looking really, really treacherous. And it's sad because our defense is really good. I mean, they're usually good on third down. Today they weren't as good, but really good on third down. Really smart with the blitz, with the blitzes, but our offense is just holding us back. And I really think Dak Prescott is the main reason for it. He doesn't have a really downfield, even intermediate accuracy, you know. And I knew that going back to 2016. And I knew everything was going good. I actually called every show on CBS and said, listen, Tony Romo needs to come back in. And everybody laughed at me. I just don't think Dak is that good. I think Jerry Jones and everybody else got caught up in the fact that they were so good at the time. But we're not that same team. And our offensive line is totally haggard right now. The main problem, and I'll finish with this, is that there's no weapons. Even if Dak was a good quarterback most weeks, there's no weapons for him. Nobody can create. Nobody can make an amazing play, and it's going to be sad. And as a Cowboys fan, I think we're going to go about 5-11 or 6-10.
You don't consider Ezekiel Elliott to be a weapon?
Well, yeah, he's a weapon. But when you have, Travis Frederick out and Tyrone Smith playing with injuries, and then you have Connor Williams, the left guard, just literally getting bull rushed into the quarterback. You know, it's tough.
You know, I gotcha. Plus, the offense is more one-dimensional. They're definitely in a transition period because they're missing their tight end that was a security blanket for so long. They obviously are missing a couple of key receivers that they've had. And
one last thing. Yeah, my last thing is just it is one-dimensional, but it's one-dimensional because the GM, Jerry Jones, who is actually super cool. I met him. He let me wear a Super Bowl ring one time, so I will always have love for him. But, you know, they got to put more attackers on there. It's the one-dimensional thing. Yeah, they thought Ezekiel Elliott was going to do everything, but then what happens when your offensive line is broke like it is now? There's no weapons. So
I mean, he still rushed for 127 yards. So I get it. It's not as good or as solid or as impenetrable as it's been the last couple of years. But I wouldn't say it's a lost cause by any stretch of the imagination. Yeah, I think they're still feeling their way out here. And Dak is maybe feeling like a guy who's lost in Never Never Land. I mean, he doesn't have the experience along with him. Cole Beasley's got a lot of speed, and they connect a few times a game. But otherwise, you're talking about guys that he is throwing to or having to rely on for the first time. And he looks like his confidence has taken a bit of a hit, and that he's second-guessing, that he's hesitating a bunch, too, because he's missing guys. So, yeah, it definitely is an offense that's out of sync. And the defense for the Seahawks made it that much tougher. Let's do another call here. Chris is in Baltimore. Welcome to After Hours CBS Sports Radio.
Hi, morning, Amy. How are you?
I'm good.
Good. You've always been one of my favorite sports talk radio shows. And I don't disagree with you too often, but you made a comment earlier saying that you didn't believe Nathan Peterson was replaced, in a sense, you know, because it was garbage time. What constitutes, in your opinion, what constitutes a quarterback being replaced in the middle of a game like that?
You don't know when the team is down by 47 points. If I'm not mistaken, that was a 47-3 final between the Ravens and the Bills. And at that point, we didn't know. We had no idea that he was actually making a quarterback change, and I don't think he did either. The point was you might as well get your rookie out there and get in some reps and not have your starter at the time, because that's who Peterman was, your starter, not have him get killed in the process. But it became a moot point, and you're talking hindsight, right? Because we now know that the Bills stuck with Josh Allen. So it's kind of hard to talk about it now because we're not in that same place where we were in week number one. And certainly the Bills have made a quarterback change. But in a game in which your team is trailing by 40-plus points, you don't make decisions like that that are for the rest of the season. They're just in that moment to try to get the heck out of Dodge.
Sure, and that's why you're one of my favorite. Good point.
Well, I mean, they did end up making a change, but I think you probably agree with me that the time that Sean McDermott switched to Josh Allen in week one, he wasn't doing it with the rest of the season in mind. He was just trying to, he was trying to protect, I think, Peterman and maybe get Allen some reps.
Yeah, I mean, I guess he could have come across the same issue, though, bringing Josh Allen in that soon. I mean, sometimes you bring a rookie quarterback in too soon, and you know, if he gets beat up the same way that Peterman did in the beginning of the game, then he may not be right the rest of his career.
Yeah, I mean, I agree with you, and that's the danger in putting a rookie quarterback behind an offensive line that's not real good. But Allen certainly does have the ability to move around, which is something that you don't get as much with Peterman.
Sure, I agree.
All right, thanks,
Chris. Have
a good
day, Amy. Thank you.
You too. Manic Monday, lots of football to talk about. It's After Hours with Amy Lawrence on CBS Sports Radio. Yeah, I mean, that was a scary move by Sean McDermott at the time. But again, when your team is trailing by 40-something points, it's like making major decisions when you're extremely emotional. I'll just use the Brett Favre as the example. You know why he kept coming out of retirement, quote unquote? Because those weren't real retirements. He was making decisions in the heat of the moment when he was frustrated, when he was emotional, when he was, you know, felt like he'd been kicked.
But acted blithe.
A rule of human nature. Do not make major decisions when you are not clear-headed, when you are emotional. And so you can't look at a quarterback change and a 40-point blowout and think, okay, it's because we're going to the rookie now. I mean, at that point, Josh Allen wouldn't have been taking reps with the ones, and so he wasn't even prepared to get out there and be the starting QB. But again, it's a moot point now because the Bills have moved on to their rookie and likely will stay that way, barring injury. It's After Hours with Amy Lawrence coming up next. Tiger Woods makes a return to the winner's circle. First time in 5 years that we've seen Tiger Woods as the last man standing, the guy on top of the PGA Tour leaderboard. But he's finally got his first win since August of 2013. We'll let you hear from him coming up, plus more of your football calls. 855-212-4227. A couple of lines still open for you. 855-212-4227.
You are listening to the After Hours Podcast. Here's Amy Lawrence.
We are asking you, what was the biggest drought buster of the sports weekend? And I don't call it just the NFL weekend. Why? Because Tiger Woods is part of that. You had the Browns winning for the first time in 635 days. You had the Detroit Lions with their first 100-yard rushing campaign for the first time since November of 2013. And then, yes, you have Tiger Woods finally on top of a PGA Tour leaderboard after Sunday's final round. I'm retweeting the poll right now on Twitter, A-Law Radio. What was the biggest drought buster of the weekend? You're also weighing in on Facebook. And it's interesting, fascinating, really, to see your answers. Twitter is going one way. Facebook is going a completely different way. So check it out, whatever your social media of choice. It's After Hours with Amy Lawrence on CBS Sports Radio. We're going to get right back to your calls as soon as you hear from one Tiger Woods, who captured the Tour Championship in Atlanta, East Lake, the course. And I have never seen a scene like this one as he was coming up the 18th hole. He had to wait for Justin Rose to finish ahead of him. Rose captured the FedEx Cup title, which means he's $10 million richer. But the tournament itself belonged to Tiger. And on the 18th hole, he and Rory McIlroy, his playing partner, are nearly engulfed by spectators. Now, usually security does not allow fans to get that close to the golfers, but because they were in the final pairing, they were allowing the fans to come up behind them and fill in the 18th fairway, even as Tiger and Rory are walking up to the green. It reminded me of some of those old videos from the days of Arnold Palmer, when it used to be Arnie's Army, and all of, and this is pre-cell phones, right? But all of the fans are literally fanning out behind him in what looked like an army. And here is the same scene at East Lake on Sunday afternoon as Tiger Woods is making his way up to the 18th green. And the fans are all around him, literally within touching distance. And he's got this gigantic smile on his face. And he said he was really emotional, that he actually had to fight back tears. He finally gets win number 80. But more importantly, after 5 years of heartache and frustration and setbacks and surgeries and wondering if he would ever walk pain-free again, much less play golf again, he's now got that giant smile on his face.
What I've gone through and what I've dealt with, I've gotten lucky, to be honest with you. I've gotten very lucky. I'm not playing a full contact sport, or, you know, I've got to move people around in that regard. 42 years old with a fused lower spine, that's not going to happen.
1,876 days in between victories. Now, he still hasn't won a major. Some of you said, wake me up when it's a major, but come on. This is significant. We'd be the same celebrating it if it had been that long for anyone else on the PGA Tour, like a Phil Mickelson when he won the British Open a couple of years ago. That was huge. It snapped a major drought for him. Keep in mind that Tiger is into his 40s now, and he's competing with guys who are half his age and are in much better shape. So it's been long, it's been arduous, it's been painful, it's been frustrating. But the struggles have made him more grateful, more approachable, more human. Let's not forget, though, what he did long before this last win. It's funny because I was going to say the good old days, but it hasn't been that long since he was dominating. It's been a decade, roughly, and yet there are people out there who forget what that was like or who never watched Tiger dominate. This is actually his 80th PGA Tour win.
To get to the 80 mark is a big number. Sam is still ahead of me. I feel like a chance to play some more golf, and maybe I'll keep chipping away at that number and maybe surpass it.
Who knows if he'll ever catch Jack Nicklaus with the 18 major wins. Tiger has been stuck on 14 now since July of 2008, so it's been more than 10 years. But he does have a chance to catch Sam Snead, who he references there. Snead won a record 82 PGA events, including 7 majors. And so Tiger is now just 2 off that mark. These were considered foregone conclusions in Tiger's heyday. Yes, he was going to be the all-time major winner. Yes, he was going to have more career wins than Sam Snead and anyone else who ever played the game. But now, it's not such a sure thing. It's After Hours here on CBS Sports Radio. I really appreciated the fact that he has become a sympathetic figure. And by that, I mean he's no longer impenetrable. This is a guy who no longer wears his arrogance like a badge of honor. He's had all of that stripped away. He's had all his pretense, all his pride completely stripped away. And now here he is as a guy that, even if you didn't root for him before, or even if you don't like the decisions that he's made in his life, whatever the case is, you can appreciate the relief and the emotional release of that moment on Sunday as he wins for the first time in 5 years.
Just to be able to compete and play again this year, that's a hell of a comeback. As I said, some of the people are very close to me. They've seen what I've gone through. I was alluding to some of the players have seen what I've gone through, and they know how hard it was just to get back to playing golf again and forget the elite level.
So is that the biggest drought buster of the sports weekend? You can find our poll on Twitter, A-Law Radio, or on our Facebook page, After Hours with Amy Lawrence. Yeah, it's fun to kind of compare because you're talking about a team sport versus an individual sport. You're talking about 635 days for the Browns versus 1,800-something for Tiger, but yet keep in mind, Tiger was on the shelf for a good portion of that, and the Browns only play 16 games a year. And so it's a perspective thing, right? It maybe seems like it's been longer for Browns fans or seems like it's been longer for Tiger Woods fans. And then you consider maybe the number of quarterbacks the Browns have gone through or the number of head coaches and front offices and how close they've been to getting the wins. Tiger's felt like he was closing in on this all year long. He had a bunch of top five finishes. He came very close at the British Open, actually held the final round lead by himself for a while, just couldn't get all phases of his game together until now. And this really wasn't a dramatic finish. The only thing that was dramatic about it was the gallery and his reaction. His kids were not there. Unfortunately, they weren't there to see him win, but pretty much everyone else who has ever seen Tiger Woods play golf will say, I was there at East Lake. Look, that's me in the gallery. It's After Hours with Amy Lawrence here on CBS Sports Radio. 855-212-4227. 855-212-4227. Tom is listening in Sugar Hill, Georgia. Welcome to After Hours.
Hi, Amy.
Hi.
Good for Tiger. Good for Tiger. Yeah. I taped it and watched it. And I was excited for him.
Yeah.
I hope it continues because one misstep and he's back to square one as far as his health is concerned. I called you about the Falcons.
Okay.
I've heard you say in the past that being a fan of a team requires you to accept the pain of being a fan of that team. Atlanta knows how to deliver that pain quite regularly. They find new ways to lose games. When today, Matty Ice had a career day. Five touchdown passes. The rookie looks
Calvin
sensational.
Ridley. Yeah, he does.
And I'm glad we have him. It should loosen up the coverages on the other players. That was nice. But you're at home and you score 37 points and you can't win.
Right.
And you're playing the wrong game. Something's wrong. And of course, people here want to blame the coach, and I think that's a bit ridiculous. He knows how to put a good team on the field. And they couldn't stop Drew Brees. Drew Brees
right.
was all world against us. And I've never liked him.
What? How could you not like Drew Brees? He's phenomenal, and he's a great ambassador for the game.
Because he plays for New Orleans.
Well, he didn't always. He started out with San Diego.
Yeah, but he looks up in the air to look through his face mask and
so you discriminate because he's shorter.
I'm discriminating because he plays.
How tall are you exactly, Tom?
Pardon me?
How tall are you?
I'm 6 foot.
Well, that's about the size of Drew Brees.
Yeah, I'd die if I tried to play that game. especially quarterback.
Please don't.
But the Falcons, all of the games they've lost in recent memory, they had every chance to win, and they know how to just bite it, bite me. And I must have said that a couple of times today. Because the pain they were delivering, I wasn't willing to accept.
No, I got you. I'm with you, Tom. If you put 5 touchdowns on the board and you have as many yards as they did, and they were well over 400 yards, and they were perfect in the red zone again, and as you talk about, it was a career day for a couple of different guys on the offense, you would expect to win, especially at home. The problem is they've got a couple of big injuries in their secondary, in their defense, and Drew Brees, as much as you may think that the man's a bum, he's too short, he's 39, whatever, he is one of the best quarterbacks in history, and they could not find a way to stop that momentum. Once they got in the second half, it was nearly impossible to slow him down, at least for them.
Yeah, I do hope you see my tongue planted firmly in my cheek when I start talking bad about Drew Brees.
Oh, whatever. I don't believe you anyway.
I'm impressed with his ability.
Of course,
he's a heck of a player, but he plays for New Orleans, and that happens to be the team I don't like the most.
I gotcha.
Even over New England, which is a shocker.
Well, that's
anyway,
not an extensive rivalry. I understand what you're saying. It was a disappointing loss, especially in overtime at home, and to waste all of that fabulous offense, Calvin Ridley, Julio Jones, nearly 100 yards, Matt Ryan, as you talk about. It was a fantasy owner's dream, but that doesn't always translate to a W. Tom, thank you so much. I have to let you go because we're at the top of the hour. While 3 hours down, we'll continue to take your football phone calls or your Tiger calls, whatever it is that you want to talk about as we emerge from the weekend into a Monday morning. It was a drought-busting weekend. It was a weekend in which 5 new NFL teams added their names, their uniforms, their logos to the win column. We also had some stunners. What happened to you, Minnesota Vikings? What happened to you? And we had 4 teams use multiple quarterbacks, make a quarterback change because of injuries or ineptitudes. There's a lot happening on the football field and a lot happening across the United States on this Monday. It's After Hours with Amy Lawrence, CBS Sports Radio.
Okay, picture this. It's Friday afternoon when a thought hits you. I can waste another weekend doing the same old whatever, or I can conquer it. I can hop into my all-new Hyundai Santa Fe and hit the road. Any road. The steeper, the better. Because my all-new Santa Fe is available with H-Track all-wheel drive, so I can hit the trail without a worry in the world. Heck, with 3 rows and best-in-class rear cargo space, I can pack the whole family in with all our gear. We've got available dual wireless charging for our phones, so we'll never lose touch with civilization, and we won't lose touch with the primordial power of Mother Earth. So which is it? Waste the weekend or do something a little more epic? And conquer it in the all-new Hyundai Santa Fe. Visit HyundaiUSA.com or call 562-314-4603 for more details. Hyundai. There's joy in every journey.